Hello everyone, good morning Grand Rising. This episode is near and dear without fear to my heart. I want to talk about non-believers, non-theists, and unbelievers. And people who are non-Christians, this is my audio letter to you all. My journey with you all started when I was approximately 7 years of age, 7 years old in layperson's terms. And it was a group of men and women who were white people. And they were the first people to convince me that my autism is beautiful, that my blackness is lovely, and that my being a child is excellent. To give more of a backdrop and background of why they said that, my grandma Claire transitioned a few months before my interactions with those men and women. And I had the orphan syndrome quite heavily. So, to be able to get those compliments from them, it helped a lot because I did not feel victorious. To be honest, I felt like a moral failure and just a failure in general. I felt like a loser. I felt like a nobody. I felt worthless, hopeless, and helpless. So I could no longer do life together with my grandma Clara in the flesh. And I had to live a morally excellent life without her. And I was extremely doubtful and severely skeptical of my ability to do so, which is to live a morally excellent life without her in the flesh. And I hated my autism, my own blackness, and my own childhood because of the torturous incidents and tormenting encounters that were had that you all are well aware of. It's well documented by me. So, with them, the men and women, they would have autism empowerment conversations with me. They were the only people doing so at the time. And they were the only people at that time having black empowerment conversations with me. And they were the first people to tell me that children have rights, children have privileges, children have entitlements, children have prerogatives, children have human rights. And they were telling me that stuff because they knew that I was just having a tough time in the world. And so what the adults would do for me, is just tell me those things. They didn't know the full extent of the pain. They just knew that being autistic and black, you know, telling them that was hard and that sometimes being a child is not easy in this world. So that's as close as I got to telling them what actually happened. And when the way they looked at me and talked to me, I think they knew much more than they were letting on, but they focused on keeping it general. They didn't want me to be more upset than I already was. And so from time to time, often, frequently, I would say every week, I was in the non-believer world. I was in the unbeliever world, the secular world, and people just not being Christian world. And so I had the most gorgeous life experiences with secular people. And the way they talked to me, I started identifying with them. Even though I was in the Christian world, I was identifying with non-believers because they were saying the things that I needed somebody to say to me. They were saying the things I wanted somebody to say to me. And the Christians in my life were not having autism empowerment conversations with me. They were not having Black empowerment conversations with me. They did not make me feel good about being a child, so they didn't talk to me about child empowerment ever. But the non-believers would have the conversations with me that I was so hungry and thirsty for. And I often felt dehydrated and starved with the Christians in my life. So I then, as time went on, in my adolescence, I remember meeting Black atheists, and I wasn't shocked because the type of schools I went to, the type of environments I tended to be a multicultural, diverse melting pot, so I was never shocked that there were people who were outside of the Black community norm, in quotations, because Black community tends to be highly religious. So when I was meeting Black atheists, I remember feeling relieved that, wow, I'm not the only one doubting faith. I'm not the only one being skeptical of religion. And I'm not the only one feeling uneasy about piety. And so meeting them, I got to share those feelings. And, you know, they would, and I remember them having the same conversation with me that the white atheists and agnostics, who were men and women, talking to me. These were Black atheist men, Black atheist women. And I met white non-binary adults and Black non-binary adults who were also atheist agnostics. So the Black adult secular people would have the same conversation that the white adult secular people would have with me. And I identified with them. They were very well receptive of my questions, my concerns, my fears. That it was no different when I was 7. I was with these Black atheists. I'm like 13, 14, 15, 16, you know, 17. And there was a lot of solidarity with us. I remember at times they said, "We are really kindred spirits, and Tony, I think you're one of us." And I would say yes, because it was a positive identification. The way they treated me is like, I want to be named and claimed by you. That's how I felt. I wanted to be named and claimed by people who weren't ignoring how I was feeling and ignoring what I was going through. And to be honest, I'm still grateful that non-believers and unbelievers and non-theists and secular people name me and claim me. It's not about slavery. It's not about bondage at all. It's about, hey, we fully embrace you. There's nothing about you that we don't want to deal with. We want to deal with all things you because we adore you completely, permanently, and unconditionally. And so I enjoy the fact that I am a true friend and a true family member of the non-believer, unbeliever community, because the way they treat me in ways that believers, a lot of believers don't. So actually, I would say that non-believers and unbelievers, I never question, was I loved? I never questioned, was I liked? I never questioned, was I appreciated? I never questioned, was I adored? I never questioned, was I admired? I never questioned, was I honored? I never questioned, was I cherished? I never questioned, was I appreciated? Are they humble about me? Are they grateful for me? I never questioned those things because I felt those, I felt affirmed and confirmed by them, and I felt validated by them. Even though, yes, I was validating myself, affirming and confirming myself, they were doing those things with me. And so, you know, that's why, and that's why I can honestly say when I had my book launch back in July, most of the people in the book launch on the Clubhouse app from Amazon Book, Autism is My Super Blessing, Volume 1, My Neurodiversity Freedom Narrative, it was mostly Black atheists in my Clubhouse app, Neurodiversity Club Room. Very few were believers. And I can honestly say what the truths about non-believers, unbelievers, and people who are just not Christian and secular people. So allow me to tell you the truth about us. So when it comes to my experiences about non-believers and unbelievers, I would say there is we possess magnificent knowledge, magnificent information, magnificent learning, magnificent scholarship, magnificent facts, magnificent wisdom, magnificent instruction, magnificent book learning, magnificent erudition, magnificent culture, magnificent data, magnificent enlightenment, magnificent expertise, magnificent intelligence, magnificent light, magnificent theory, magnificent science, magnificent principles, magnificent philosophy, magnificent awareness, magnificent insight, magnificent education, magnificent substance, magnificent store of learning, magnificent know-how, and magnificent lore. What that means for me is they have, you know, have a way of wholesome influence. That's healthy type of lore. And those were And I gained more wisdom from non-believers than believers. And that's still a truth and a fact of my life, even as an adult, that I am. And this is what I really want to say and need to say about non-believers. Non-believers are of kindness, the quality of being kind, tenderness, good intentions, consideration, sympathy, sweetness, helpfulness, tact, benignity, mildness, courtesy, thoughtfulness, humanity, courteousness, understanding, compassion, unselfishness, altruism, warm-heartedness, soft-heartedness, politeness, kindliness, clemency, benevolence, goodness, philanthropy, charity, humanitarianism, friendliness, affection, loving kindness, cordiality, mercy, amiability, forbearance, graciousness, kind-heartedness, and they possess virtues that are universal, not religious in nature. Therefore, non-believers are the enemies of cruelty, brutality, and selfishness. Non-believers are against injuries, transgressions, and wrongs. And non-believers are of kindly acts, relief, charity, benevolence, philanthropy, favor, good deeds, good turns, positive self-sacrifice, mercy, lifts, and boosts, and help. B-O-O-S-T-S. So, I want to tell you that the life that I live with non-believers is fantastic to me. And as I got older, I became more and more secular, naturally secular. Because I wanted to be morally excellent without conservative, traditionalist biblicism. And so, for myself, I decided, well, non-believers treat me like family, treat me, as a friend. So I go where the healthy love is. I go where the healthy acceptance is. I go where the healthy approval is. I go where the healthy comfort is. I go where the healthy ambition is. And I tend to find that within non-believers the most. I just do. And I feel for me that this audio letter, I'm also going to take the time to now talk about something that I was in a black atheist room, and I'm a member of that because, again, I'm actually treated and seen as a fully human being there, so that's why I'm there. And the article that they put up in the Clubhouse app, it's called The Grieving Non-Believers Bill of Rights, July 15, 2019, by Rebecca Hensler, founder of Grief Beyond Belief a faith-free support network. So let me read to you. Many grieving persons' Bill of Rights are now available on the internet, usually modified from the mourner persons' Bill of Rights by Alan D. Wolfett, PhD, director of the Center for Loss and Life Transition. So what they're saying is that a lot of times people stigmatize grief, and stigmas of grief, society keeps at both believers and non-believers. But most people don't talk about, okay, how do non-Christians, secularists, what's grieving like if you're secular and a non-believer, right? I read on. It says, one thing the various versions have in common is a passage that says that a grieving person has the right to embrace their spirituality and to receive support from people who share their faith. And that's typically how believers experience their version of solace, S-O-L-A-C-E, in terms of bereavement and recuperation and recovery. Often the passage reassures the grieving person that it's okay to feel, quote unquote, angry at God. I think that most believers would appreciate that because their humanity is not discarded just because they feel rightfully woeful about what happened. But not one version that I have found acknowledges those of us who are grieving without spirituality and our right to receive appropriate support from people who share our lack of faith beliefs. Now, that's very important. That's extremely important because I think about the fact that it's very insulting to tell a non-believer that through religious cliches and Christianese, because that deepens the grief. It makes the sadness stronger, and it worsens the depression. You know, to have that anxiety without your loved one, it's melancholic. So the melancholy enlarges because you said use religious language, and that's not helpful when you're a grieving non-believer, as it said. When you're a bereaving unbeliever too. It says, so Rebecca Hensler, founder of Grief Beyond Belief. So Rebecca, she's writing all these words. I'm just sharing you what I think. So Rebecca says, so I have created a Bill of Rights just for us. I have replaced the right to grieve with faith, with the right to grieve without faith, as well as the right to receive support from other non-believers, and the right to reject religion-based comfort. I think that's excellent. And it also makes me more humane. Because I know how to grieve with all types of people. And this is also, I was always good at that. I knew with non-believers, unbelievers, nothing about religion ever came up when we were going through. Mm-mm. And they were able to grieve better because of that, because of what I was doing. And this also helps me keep things in proper perspective. It says, in addition, I added an item acknowledging that even rational people engage in irrational thoughts and behaviors when grieving. No shade thrown, no disses, shot at anybody. It's just grief. It's hard to fully embody wisdom when sad ass shit feels like it's fucking us up. Then it says, I also modified the second item to embed Bonanno's findings that a balance between actively grief engaging in non-grief related activities promotes resilience. And finally, I modified some of the items to encourage grieving non-believers to engage in meaning-making and maintain a connection to their loved one through memorializing and honoring the deceased's lasting impact on the world. How would I describe that? I would say that it is okay to be the calmness, the serenity, and the cool-headedness pertaining to the non-believers and non-believers go through. It's okay to be the level-headedness, the equanimity, and the tranquility that non-believers need when non-believers go through. The grieving non-believers' Bill of Rights. Number one, you have the right to experience your own unique grief. No one will grieve the same way you do. So when you turn to others for help, don't let them tell you how you should be feeling. I approve that message. Number two, you have the right to talk about your grief or not. Talking about your grief may help you heal, but so may giving yourself a break or a distraction. Seek out others who will let you talk as much or as little as you want. I approve that message. Number three, you have the right to feel a multitude of emotions during your grief journey. Some may tell you that feeling angry, for example, is wrong. Don't take these judgmental responses to heart. Find listeners who will accept your feelings without condition. I strongly approve that message. Number four, you have the right, even as a rational thinker, to behave in irrational ways in your grief. Just don't break the law, okay? As long as you don't break the law, that's what matters, right? Knowing that your loved one cannot hear you does not mean you cannot speak to them if it makes you feel better. The same goes for keeping odd mementos, crying in public, and avoiding or gravitating toward reminders. Not everything you do to survive grief needs to be logical or make sense to you or to anyone else. Well, I want to talk about that. Sometimes there are some non-believers who will talk out loud. It could be in their room or wherever they are, wherever we are, and talk about... And talk to the loved ones if they're still here, because you're so used to talking to them in the flesh. There's nothing crazy about that to me at all. Because when you're so used to doing something and you're not able to do that anymore, and you're expected to transition out of that, it's inhumane to make somebody feel like a gum on the back of people's shoes on the ground. Whenever they're grieving in a way that's harmless and helpful to them. So I strongly approve that message. Number five, you have the right to be tolerant of your physical and emotional limits. Feelings of loss and sadness can fatigue you. Respect what your body and mind tell you. Get daily rest, eat balanced meals, and don't allow others to push you into activities you're not ready for. I strongly approve that message. Number six, you have the right to experience grief, quote unquote, attacks. Sometimes a powerful surge of grief may overcome you. This can be frightening, but it is normal. Find someone who understands and will let you talk it out. Number seven, you have, and I strongly approve of number six, I do, of that message. Number seven, you have the right to make use of ritual if you want to. Collective rituals provide you with support from caring people, as well as a way to mourn. Private rituals are no one's business but your own and can help you live with your grief as you move forward in life. I strongly approve that message. Number eight, you have the right to embrace your own personal knowledge and belief about the nature and meaning of life and death. If philosophy or science is important to your understanding of your loss, express it. If you can, be with people who share and support your lack of belief in deities, pseudoscience, the supernatural, any kind of afterlife. If you cannot find other non-believers in your area, connect with them online. I strongly approve that message. You have the right to reject quote-unquote help that is not helping nor helpful. This includes offers to pray and pressure to accept religion-based support or rituals. I strongly approve that message. Number 10. You have the right to search for meaning and to make meaning of your loss. You may ask, why did they die? Why this way? Why now? Watch out for cliched responses like, everything happens for a reason, or they're in a better place. These sentiments are not helpful if you're a non-believer, and you do not have to agree with them. Some questions may have answers, others don't. And in some cases, you can create meaning by acting, giving, and creating in a way that memorializes your loved one. I strongly approve that message. You have a right to treasure your memories. Memories are one of the best legacies that exists after the death of a loved one. You will always remember. Instead of ignoring your memories, find others with whom you can share them. I strongly approve this message. Number 12. You have a right to maintain your relationship with your loved one as they exist in your mind and heart. The fact that their body and consciousness are gone does not mean they do not live on in everything they taught you and all the ways they affected you and others. Find ways to connect with your loved one's lasting impact on you and the world around you. I strongly approve that message. And I also want to add that it's okay to do community service projects and community upliftment work as a way to grieve in community instead of grieving all by yourself everywhere all the time. So being kind to others is a way to honor the one who has passed on, and the ones who've passed on. Number 13, you have the right to move towards your grief and heal. Reconciling your grief will not happen quickly because it is never overnight. Remember, grief is a lengthy process, not an event that is quick snap in a hurry. Be patient with yourself and avoid people who are unreasonably impatient with you. Neither you nor those around you should forget that the death of someone loved changes your life forever. Secular grief. And I'm glad I did this episode because I wanted to share how some there's a plurality of thought regarding non-belief in the non-believer world. Some think that there is some kind of utopia in death, and some don't. Some say, I don't know. Some feel like they still hear from their loved ones, like that voice in their heart. Some say they don't, and some say, I don't know. So grief is a spectrum in the non-believer world, and a lot of people don't understand. Just because they don't believe, it doesn't mean that they don't think that there could be, for some, that there could be a way to still have some kind of communication or them to still be around. So every non-believer is different on that. I would say most would not. I can't speak for most because that would be unfair. I would say there's a lot of non-believers who reject the religion's claims of death, while some go, it may be possible, while some go, maybe there's a secular version of those things. So that's the plurality of thought patterns on grief and death that occurred in the non-believer world. So I'm not saying anything that's disrespectful, because there's non-believers will be like, okay, yes, you're actually speaking the truth about, you know, the feelings, you know, our feelings. So I think, you know, I'm just so glad that, you know, I was able to do an episode about this. And what I do want to share with non-believers is this. There's a difference between us and the organized crime figures that were of religious persecution regarding me. There's a difference between atheist agnostics and the Joseph Stalins of the world. Let's just put it that way. And that's what helped me to heal in terms of that understanding, because y'all already know how the organized crime figures they were torturing me, mostly because of my autism and being a kid, but also being a Christian. And I don't throw away or toss away the persecution claim very lightly. I'm talking about what actually happened to me. That's why I was raped and all those other horrible shit that fucking happened to me. And the reason why I'm saying that is, usually I don't use the word persecution, but the only time I was persecuted was organized crime world as a child. And that's why I was also all the beatings and drug world, numbers runner world, all that. That's why they were doing all those things to me. But I hate when people abuse the word persecution. And most people who say that, they are assholes and ass cracks. And that's why they are rightfully seen as fucked up ass motherfuckers that folks should stay the hell away from. Agreed. And so I just think about that. And I also want to say that what makes me embraced by the non-believer community the most is 100% embraced by the non-believer community. What makes me have that that prestigious reality is that I want to really, really, I really want to say this, because it makes it so simplistic when it's being shared. So this is what I want to say. I want to say that I am not offended by the rejection of supernaturalism, deities, miracles, transcendental entities, life after death, and the supernatural when it comes to non-believers, because they all have good hearts, and they're all coming from good places. a good place is a good heart. And their rejection of all, you know, the rejection of all religions, laws, beliefs, precepts, tenets, commandments, statutes, rules, regulations, and boundaries, and claims, all the verses of all the religious texts. It's not offensive to me at all, because I know that also they're well-meaning, well-behaved people. And that's what I feel in my soul. And as I was leaving off, I wanted to continue more. I want to talk about more of the non-believer perspective. This is AmericanHumanist.org. It says, "Humanism is a progressive philosophy of life that, without theism or other supernatural beliefs, affirms our ability and responsibility to lead ethical lives of personal fulfillment that aspire to the greater good, American Human Association. Because that's all coming from a good heart, which is a good place, I am not offended by that whatsoever at all." So the Humanist magazine says, "Humanism is a rational philosophy informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Affirming the dignity of each human being, it supports the maximization of individual liberty, an opportunity consonant with social and planetary responsibility. It advocates the extension of participatory democracy and the expansion of the open society, standing for human rights and social justice. Free of supernaturalism, it recognizes human beings as a part of nature and holds that values, be they religious, ethical, social, or political, have their source in human experience and culture. Humanism thus derives the goals of life from human need and interest, rather than from theological or ideological abstractions, and asserts that humanity must take responsibility for its own destiny. Because that's all coming from a good place, which is a good heart, I am not offended by that whatsoever at all." Humanist International says, "Humanism is a democratic and ethical life stance, which affirms that human beings have the right and responsibility to give meaning and shape to their own lives. It stands for the building of a more humane society through an ethics based on humane and other natural values and a spirit of reason and free inquiry through human capabilities. It is not theistic and it does not accept supernatural views of reality." That's Humanist International. "Because that's all coming from a good place, which is a good heart, I'm not offended by that whatsoever at all." The Bristol Humanist Group: "Humanism is an approach to life based on reason and our common humanity, recognizing that moral values are properly founded on human nature and experience alone." That's the Bristol Humanist Group. "Because all of that is coming from a good place, which is a good heart, I'm not offended by that whatsoever at all." The Humanist Society of Western New York says, "Humanism is a joyous alternative to religions that believe in a supernatural God and life in the hereafter. Humanists believe that this is the only life of which we have certain knowledge, and that we owe it to ourselves and others to make it the best life possible for ourselves and all with whom we share this fragile planet. A belief that when people are free to think for themselves, using reason and knowledge as their tools, they are best able to solve this world's problems. An appreciation of the art, literature, music, and crafts that are our heritage from the past, and of the creativity, and of the creativity that, if nourished, can continuously enrich our lives. Humanism is, in sum, S-U-M, a philosophy of those in love with life. Humanists take responsibility for their own lives and relish the adventure of being part of new discoveries, seeking new knowledge, exploring new options. Instead of finding solace in prefabricated answers to the great questions of life, humanists enjoy the open-endedness of a quest and the freedom of discovery that this entails. Because all of that is coming from a good place, which is a good heart, I'm not offended by that whatsoever at all. Bette Chambers, former president of the American Humane Association, AHA, says, "Humanism is the light of my life and the fire in my soul. It is the deep felt conviction in every fiber of my being that human love is a power far transcending the relentless onward rush of our largely deterministic cosmos. All human life must seek a reason for existence within the bounds of an uncaring physical world. And it is love coupled with empathy, democracy, and a commitment to selfless service which undergirds the faith of a humanist." I know that non-believers need the word faith. I'll subtract the word faith to be respectful and say undergirds the conviction of a humanist. Because all that is coming from a good place, which is a good heart, I am not offended by that whatsoever at all. Steve Schaefer's man says, "Humanism is a philosophy, worldview, or life stance based on naturalism, the conviction that the universe or nature is all that exists or is real. Humanism serves many humanists some of the psychological and social functions of a religion, but without belief in deities, transcendental entities, miracles, life after death, and the supernatural. Humanists seek to understand the universe by using science and its methods of critical inquiry, logical reasoning, empirical evidence, and skeptical evaluation of conjectures and conclusions to obtain reliable knowledge. Humanists affirm that humans have the freedom to give meaning, value, and purpose to their lives by their own independent thought, free inquiry, and responsible creative activity. Humanists stand for the building of a more humane, just, compassionate, and democratic society using a pragmatic ethics based on human reason, experience, and reliable knowledge, and ethics that judges the consequences of human actions by the well-being of all life on Earth." Because all that is coming from a good place, which is a good heart, I'm not offended by that whatsoever at all. Lastly, Joseph C. Sommer, S-O-M-M-E-R, says, "Humanism is a philosophy of life that considers the well-being of humankind rather than the welfare of a supposed god or gods to be of paramount importance. Humanism maintains there is no evidence a supernatural power or ever needed or wanted anything from people, ever communicated to them, or ever interfered with the laws of nature to assist or harm anyone. Humanism's focus then is on using human efforts to meet human needs and wants in this world. History shows that those efforts are most effective when they involve both compassion and the scientific method, which includes reliance on reason, evidence, and free inquiry. Humanism says people can find purpose in life and maximize their long-term happiness by developing their talents, using those talents for the service of humanity. Humanists believe that this approach to life is more productive and leads to a deeper and longer lasting satisfaction than a hedonistic pursuit of material or sensual pleasures that soon fade, F-A-D-E. While service to others is a major focus of humanism, recreation and relaxation are not ignored, for these two are necessary for long-term health and happiness. The key is moderation in all things. Humanism considers the universe to be the result of extremely long and complex evolution under immutable laws of nature. Humanists view this natural world as wondrous and precious and as offering limitless opportunities for exploration, fascination, creativity, companionship, and joy. Because science cannot now and probably never will be able to explain the ultimate origin or destiny of the universe, I think humanism can include more than atheists and agnostics. The lack of definite answers to these ultimate questions leaves room for reasonable people to hypothesize about the origin of the natural universe and even to hope for some form of life beyond this one. In fact, two of humanism's greatest luminaries, Thomas Paine and Robert Ingersoll, maintained a hope for an afterlife. On the issue of whether God exists, Ingersoll was agnostic and Paine believed in a deistic God who established the laws of nature but then stepped away and never intervenes in the world. Those beliefs did not interfere with their ability to lead outstanding humanistic lives. Thus, in my opinion, people holding such views can be humanists if they believe that humanity is on its own in this world and the lack of any evidence for an afterlife means this life should be lived as though it's the only one we have. Note, these definitions of humanism are provided for the education interests of readers. The AHA does not necessarily agree with or advocate anyone except the definition in printed verse above, officially approved by the AHA Board of Directors. Because all of those words are coming from a good place, which is a good heart. I'm not offended at all whatsoever by any of it. There's more. And I did this article before, but it's got to be used again. Living Humanist Values, the Ten Commandments. Critical thinking. As we are each bombarded with a constant stream of information, it can become challenging to decide what is accurate and true. Thinking critically allows us to make sense of all this information and reason our way to good judgments and effective solutions to the problems we face while rigorously avoiding pitfalls like rationalization, conformity, and stereotyping. This process forms the basis of the scientific method, which opens the door for new discoveries through hypothesizing and experimenting. Critical thinking is a skill that requires continued attention, practice, and reflection. Exercising our minds to build these skills enables us to challenge biases in ourselves and in others, paving the way for a fair, open-minded, and autonomous perspective that fosters a multicultural worldview. So non-believers value critical thinking. Ethical development. The key to understanding ethical development is acknowledging that nobody is perfect or has all the answers. Ethical development is a never-ending process that requires constant reflection and evaluation of our personal choices and the consequences they have on others. Fairness, cooperation, and sharing among the first moral issues we encounter in our ethical development as human beings and often embrace intuitively, but each new day carries with its new challenges and new moral dilemmas. We should continually adapt and build our moral frameworks with the goal of becoming even better human beings. Non-believers are of ethical development. Peace and social justice. True peace involves an intense commitment to social justice and affirms the human rights and personal autonomy of all people. Any level of injustice against groups or individuals signifies existing conflict, even if the conflict isn't immediate or obvious. We attain peace only by consistently responding to injustice through thoughtful conflict resolution and aims to repair harms and ensure a fair and equitable society moving forward. This kind of conflict resolution is known as restorative justice. In order to achieve a just, peaceful society, we all must take claims of injustice seriously and ensure that those who are impacted most by rights violations determine the best course forward. Non-believers are of peace and social justice. Service and participation. Service and participation means putting values into action in ways that positively impact our communities and society as a whole. It fosters helping others, increasing social awareness, enhancing accountability, and many attributes of the other nine commitments. Engaging in service doesn't just make the recipients better off, but those who serve can develop new skills, experiences, and personal satisfaction, and all promote personal growth. We must all recognize that we are members of a group, and engaging in service to benefit the group and the other individuals in it makes us all better off. Non-believers are of science and participation. Empathy. Empathy means entering imaginatively into another situation in an attempt to understand the experience as though we are experiencing it ourselves. Empathy requires a person to step outside of their own perspective to consider someone else's thoughts, feelings, or circumstance from that person's point of view. In many ways, empathy is the first step to ethical behavior as it allows us to respond compassionately to the suffering of others and exercise good judgment when our actions may affect someone else. Understanding another's perspective is not only critical to building better relationships, but also makes us better citizens in our local and global communities. Empathy promotes tolerance, consideration, and compassion amongst us all. Non-believers are of empathy. Humility. Humility means displaying modesty about accomplishments, talents, gifts, or importance of self. It acknowledges we humans are fallible and have limitations of what we know and can do. Being humble is about having low self-esteem or denigrating oneself. Humility at its core is robust self-awareness, awareness of our strengths and weaknesses, our faults and our merits. Humility involves setting aside personal pride and overcoming our egos to embrace gratitude for what you have and appreciate others for who they are. In being humble, one recognizes their own value in relation to others. Inherently, you are neither better nor worse than anyone else. Non-believers are of humility. Environmentalism. Regardless of our individual identities, we all share the same home, planet Earth. Just as we depend on the planet to sustain us with its precious resources, this planet's ecosystems depend on us to be good stewards and take responsibility for the impact human activity has on our shared planet. Disregard for the large-scale impacts humans have on our environment has caused extensive harm to Earth's ecosystems. Despite this, humanity is also capable of positive environmental change that values interdependence of all life on this planet. Each of us must acknowledge our collective and individual mistakes, repair past damages, and purposely work toward cultivating rich, diverse, and resilient ecosystems. So non-believers are of environmentalism. Global awareness. We live in a world that is rich in cultural, social, and individual diversity. A world with rapidly increasing interdependence. As a result, events anywhere are more likely to have consequences everywhere. Global awareness broadens our knowledge of cultures and perspectives that are outside of our own experience. A true global awareness includes attention to both current and historical events and acknowledges how we affect and how we are affected by the interconnected social, political, and economic systems in which we reside. The end goal of global awareness is global citizenship, which recognizes our personal responsibility to foster a healthy, dignified life for everyone in our global community. Non-believers are of global awareness responsibility. Every day, each of us makes choices. These choices, large and small, all have consequences for ourselves and for the world around us. More responsibility involves taking conscious ownership of one's intentions and actions and being accountable for the resulting consequences. Although we all live in a society with various cultural values, expectations, codes of conduct, and social mores, ultimately we all decide for ourselves what is right and wrong. Being a responsible person involves steadfast attention to what is right and willfully bearing the blame or praise for our own actions. Non-believers are of responsibility. Altruism. Altruism is the selfless concern for the welfare of other living beings without expectation of reward, recognition, or return. The collective welfare of our communities and society depends on the welfare of each individual person. We should always seek to alleviate the suffering and hardships of others with compassionate action. By caring for others around us, lifting each other up, we reinforce healthy connections and contribute to the betterment of our society, our community, and our world. Non-believers are of altruism. The 10 commandments of humanistic leadership. Number one, listening. Ralph Nichols said, "The most basic of all human needs is the need to understand and be understood. The best way to understand people is to listen to them." So non-believers excel at listening and active listening. Number two, empowerment. General George S. Patton said, "Never tell people how to do things. Tell them what to do and they will surprise you with their ingenuity." So non-believers excel at empowerment, especially positive empowerment. Appreciation. Ralph Marston said, "Make it a habit to tell people thank you. Express your appreciation sincerely and without the expectation of anything in return. Truly appreciate those around you, you'll soon find many others around you. Truly appreciate life and you'll find that you have more of it." So non-believers excel in appreciation. Devotion. William Faulkner said, "The man, the woman, or the non-binary person who removes a mountain begins by carrying around small stones." And to be fully inclusive, the genderless person who removes a mountain begins by carrying away small stones. So non-believers excel in rational devotion. Empathy. Marcus Aurelius said, "Whenever you're about to find fault with someone, ask yourself the following question. What fault of mine most nearly resembles the one I'm about to criticize?" So non-believers excel in empathy. Respect. Dwight D. Eisenhower said, "This world of ours must avoid becoming a community of dreadful fear and hate. It means that a proud confederation of mutual trust and respect." So non-believers excel in respect. Simplification. General Colin Powell said, great leaders are almost always great simplifiers who can cut through argument, debate, and doubt to offer a solution everybody can understand. So non-believers excel in simplification. Honesty. Nelson Mandela said, as I have said, the first thing is to be honest with yourself. You can never have an impact on society if you have not changed yourself. Great peacemakers are all people of integrity, of honesty and humility. So non-believers excel in honesty. Inspiration. William Arthur Ward says, the mediocre teacher tells, the good teacher explains, the superior teacher demonstrates, the great teacher inspires. So non-believers excel in positive inspiration. Lastly, perseverance. Abraham Lincoln said, adhere to your purpose and you will soon feel as well as you ever did. On the contrary, if you falter and give up, you will lose the power of keeping any resolution and will regret it all your life. So non-believers excel in perseverance. So non-believers have all of the 10 commandments of humanistic leadership down pat, meaning it's done very well. They do it very well. So non-believers excel in humanistic leadership. There's more. A secular version of the Ten Commandments. Number one, be open-minded and be willing to alter your beliefs with new evidence. Strive to understand what is most likely to be true, not to believe what you wish to be true. The scientific method is the most reliable way of understanding the natural world. Every person has the right to control over their own body. God is not necessary to be a good person to live a full and meaningful life. Be mindful of the consequences of all your actions and recognize that you must take responsibility for them. Treat others as you would want them to treat you, and you can reasonably expect them to want to be treated. Think about their perspective. We have the responsibility to consider others, including future generations. There is no one right way to live. Leave the world a better place than you found it. Oh, I just love all of this. I truly do. Here are the Atheist Ten Commandments Center for Inquiry. It says, leave a place as good or better than what you got there. The earth and everything on it is finite, so don't fuck it up. Don't mess it up for yourself, for others, for future occupants. This is common courtesy for the next person to use any space. True, everyone reading this in 2018 will probably be dead in 100 years, but unless you want future generations lumping you with the error who ruined the planet, heed this suggestion. Number two, be nice and be fair. This is based on the amended golden rule. Treat people as they wish to be treated. Okay, most people can look inward, I-N-W-A-R-D, for this standard. But there are those masochists and fetishists out there who might have some warped idea of what a good time is. This isn't fucking complicated, though. Number three, suck it up and quit whining. I'm talking about people who can do something positive about things, but they choose laziness instead. I'm only talking to those people. We all have our problems, some more than others, but no one wants to hear about every little problem you have. This is a call to be tough, resilient, and robust. It is not a call to ignore injustice. In his book, Deep Survival, Who Lives, Who Dies, and Why, Lawrence Gonzalez writes about the rules of three. He essentially says that real problems begin when you go 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. Put in that context, most of our daily annoyances pale in comparison. Wow. Extreme gratitude is what I got of that. Number four, live within your means. Don't let people sell things tell you what you need to be. But don't let people sell things tell you what you need to be happy. You don't need a PlayStation 11 or whatever they're up to now. Save a little. If your means are considerable, think about spreading the wealth around a little to those less fortunate. It is your money, but think about it. Nobody needs a Maserati. The author said, I would like to get one out on a desert highway and punch it through, though. I just love the humor. makes it easier to ingest the wisdom. Number 5, take responsibility for what you do. Oh, don't or don't do, you lazy ass bastard. Sorry, I was talking to myself, the author said. And how inclined are you to blame others for something you had a hand in? This includes saying, I'm sorry, and owning up to any damage or unhappiness you caused. I apologize. I saw you leave that fake note on the windshield of the car you dented. It isn't easy sometimes, but doing right pays the fuck off in self-respect. Number 6, stop watching screen so much, live a little. Sorry if you're reading this on the screen, but I'm talking about proportion. The author says, I recently saw a table full of 20-somethings at a bar on a Friday night. They were all looking at their phones, not talking, laughing, or flirting, staring down at a blue light. Sweet Jesus, pun intended for the non-believers. Why leave the house? In the giant forest in Sequoia National Forest, many people seemed more concerned with their selfies and seeing General Sherman, the largest living tree on earth. Watching a travel show is not traveling. Playing your Wii is not exercising. Fully present experiences beat video watching every time. And while we're at it, get the fuck off my lawn. Actually, we changed over to Stones years ago. The author's cracking me up. Number 7, try to see the other person's point of view. Our tribal instincts make it easy to demonize others, whatever kind of quote unquote other that is. But really, most of the world just wants to make a decent living, be warm and safe, and yuck it up every now and then. Try a little empathy on for size, even for the Presbyterians. Pun intended, wow. They're people too, you know. Mm-hmm. 8, don't believe everything you hear or see. We live in an age where there is more information available to more people than ever in the history of the world. That's mostly a damn good thing. Church and other institutions have purposely kept people ignorant for much of human history, which is a tragic ass hard truth. But there's an incredible amount of bullshit out there as well. Any crackpot with a credit card in 2 hours can create a website that is 100% badass information. Not badass in a good way. Exercise those skeptical muscles every now and then. If it sounds crazy as hell, it probably fucking is. Number 9, you keep your brain and body active. This is pure quality of life here. Strong and fit bodies not only make day-to-day life easier, they keep good-ass blood supplies coursing through your gray matter as well. Reading, exploring, doing things differently, doing shit differently, evidence shows all that helps keep the brain fit too. Man, I just love reading logic. I really do. I love to read logic out loud. It's one of my forms of therapy. Number 10, tell someone to kiss your ass when appropriate. I'm not talking about gratuitous expletives, even though there are appropriate circumstances for that as well. I'm just saying, stating. I'm talking about resisting the temptation to sell your ethical soul. There are times in life when an offer comes along to do a wrong that will bring you some profit, even safety. Do your best to deny another's attempt to corrupt you. I know some people don't believe in souls. And they're non-believers, and that's okay. And some people, early when I was doing the article talk about praise for an action, some people would say compliments because people non-believers, and that should be respected. But yeah, don't destroy your inner life for corruption. That's what I got at that. Number 11, take a moment every day to be grateful. No matter how bad it gets, someone out there is worse off or dead. That's the bottom line, isn't it? You, on the other hand, if you're actually reading this and not merely in a coma, aren't dead yet. So there's that. It just got to be mentally healthy to shift your thinking from what's wrong with the world or your life to what's right with it. At least once in a while, hope springs eternal. I know that they're putting some, like, religion jokes in here that is, that makes non-believers laugh. And it's supposed to be therapeutic. It's not meant to disrespect non-believers at all. And I don't know who the hell this Hope is, but I think she's got the right idea, springing like she does, whatever the hell that means. Whatever the fuck that means. Let me see here. Anything more I would like to... You know, I just do one more reading. Okay, the Ten Commandments of Secular Progressivism. This is by Rich. I read a different one. That one turned out to make fun of non-believers, so I choose not to read that one. I'll read this one last one. This is by I'm gonna still look around for another one because I'll just say this while I'm looking around. I'll just keep talking. So I do think about how I am open to voting for atheists, agnostics, humanists, and secularists. I'm open to dating secular people. I'm open to having a sex life which includes secular people. And I want to be able to talk about what's important when it comes to my life with non-believers. We have a healthy social life. We enjoy our interpersonal intimacy, our social intimacy, our emotional intimacy, our crisis intimacy, our conflict intimacy, our intellectual intimacy, and the icing on the cake is the sexual intimacy. That's just extra, which includes physical intimacy, obviously, but most of our physical intimacy is not sex. It's that when we have it, it's the ta-da. So I just wanted to really communicate that. I think that is so important. Okay, here is the secular version of the Ten Commandments. The world is real, and our desire to understand the world is the basis for belief. We can perceive the world only through our human senses. We use rational thought, language as tools for understanding the world. All truth is proportional to the evidence. And of course, if you're a non-believer, you'll say there's no God. That's number five. We all strive to live a happy life. We pursue things that make us happy and avoid things that do not. There's no universal moral truth. Our experiences and preferences shape our sense of how to behave. We act morally when the happiness of others makes us happy. We benefit from living in and supporting an ethical society. All our beliefs are subject to change in the face of new evidence, including these, which is Bayer and Figdor's 10 Non-Commandments, 2014. As detailed in the book Atheist Mind, Humanist Heart, Rewriting the Ten Commandments for the 21st Century by Lex Bayer and the Stanford Humanist Chaplain John Figder, is devoted to the subject of creating a secular alternative to the Ten Commandments and encouraging readers to formulate and discover their own list of beliefs. So, I highly respect that. And I just want to say, when it comes to my life with non-believers too, that I just got older and older, and I started experiencing secular people more and more. And Clubhouse, I mean, I'm a member of the, as you already know, the Black Atheist Club on Clubhouse, and the Black Atheist House, which is based on the Black Atheist Club and Clubhouse, because it's not just for atheists, it's for agnostics, it's for free thinkers, it's for humanists, critics of religion, those uncertain, unsure of spirituality, and those who are disillusioned and disenchanted with religion. It's even for people who are those who just are religiously unaffiliated, you know, the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, them. So, why are the reasons for me being a part of the group? I would say that, why am I a member of the Black Atheist World? I would say because they treat me better than believers do, and they see me better then they actually see me as a person, and they do a better job of that than believers, and they actually have substantive conversation. They talk about the solutions, the Black community problems, what's swept under the rug that needs to be exposed so families and communities can be healed. I mean, they have all the taboo conversation that society goes, mm-mm. What goes now stays in the house. And Black Atheist Club, we call bullshit on that. And they have all the types of conversations that trauma survivors are so eager to have. These healing conversations that families pretend that don't need to be had, that don't need to be held. We hold them and have them, the talks. So those are the reasons why I was in the club, in the house of Black Atheists. So, that being said, I look forward to doing life together with unbelievers, non-believers, and the secular community. Here's the best way to conclude the episode. So, here's my talk to non-believers. So, survivors of abuse of authority are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of abuse of discretion are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of abuse of dominance are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of abuse of indulgences are leaving houses of worship. Some people are leaving houses of worship because there's a history of abuse of corpse, also known as necrophilia, within houses of worship. And the people who need that to be talked about, they don't hear it, and that's why they're leaving houses of worship. Survivors of abuse of information are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of abuse of power are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of abuse of process are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of abuse of rank are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of abuse of statistics are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of abuse of the system are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of abuse of trust are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of abusive supervision are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of academic abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of adolescent abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of adult abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of alcohol use disorder are leaving houses of worship. Some people are leaving houses of worship because there is a dreadful silence on animal abuse. And those who've witnessed animal abuse, just like necrophilia, they're leaving houses of worship. So, if you're quiet on animal abuse, people are saying, I'm out. I'm not going to church no more. I'm not going to temple anymore. I'm not going to mosque anymore. I'm not going to the synagogue anymore. They're leaving houses of worship. And I want to say this one more time. There are some people who have witnessed necrophilia. They're hoping houses of worship preach against it. They don't. That's why they're leaving houses of worship. Survivors of antisocial behavior are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of bullying are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of character assassination are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of child abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of parental abuse of children are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of child sexual abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of child-on-child sexual abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of church abuse, mosque abuse, temple abuse, and synagogue abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of civil rights abuses are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of clandestine abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of clerical abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of cyber abuse or cyber bullying are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of defamation are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of dating abuse or dating violence are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of disability abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of detainee abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of discriminatory abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of doctor abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of domestic abuse or domestic violence are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of drug abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of economic abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of elder abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of emotional abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of employee abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of false accusations are leaving houses of worship. Remember, survivors of employee abuse are leaving houses of worship. And remember, survivors of emotional abuse are leaving houses of worship. And remember, survivors of false accusations are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of financial abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of gaming the system are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of flag abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of gaming the system are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of gaslighting are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of gay abuse or gay bashing are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of harassment are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of hate crimes are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of hazing are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of human rights abuses are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of humiliation are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of incivility are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of institutional abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of insults are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of intimidation are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of legal abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of lesbian abuse or lesbian bashing are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of market abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of malpractice are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of material abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of medical abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of mental abuse and psychological abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of intellectual abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of spiritual abuse, spiritual bypassing, and spiritualizing are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of toxic positivity are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of La La Land, Fantasy Land, Fairy Tale Land, Happy Happy Joy Joy, Peaches and Cream, Sugar Rainbows, Sugar Spice, and Everything Nice. Can we all get along? Let's sing a song. Let's all be friends and hold hands and dance. They're all leaving houses of worship. Survivors of military abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of mind abuse or mind control are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of misconduct are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of mobbing are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of narcissistic abuse, psychopathic abuse, sociopathic abuse, and psychopathic abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of neglect are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of negligence are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of nurse abuse or nursing abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of online abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of parental abuse by children are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of passive-aggressive behavior are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of patient abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of actual persecution are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of patient abuse are leaving houses of worship. Just remember that. Survivors of peer abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of personal abuse or personal attacks are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of torture are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of physical abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of police abuse, police brutality, police corruption, police misconduct, power harassment, and sexual harassment are all leaving houses of worship. Survivors of political abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of prejudice are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of prison abuse or prisoner abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of professional abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of psychological abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of racial abuse and racism are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of ragging are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of rape, R-A-P-E, are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of relational aggression are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of religious abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of rudeness are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of resident abuse are leaving houses of worship. And remember, survivors of resident abuse and rudeness are leaving houses of worship. And remember, survivors of religious abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of school bullying are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of sectarian abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of sexual abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of self-abuse and self-destructive behavior are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of sexual bullying are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of sibling abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of spiritual abuse and societal abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of smear campaigns and sibling abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of stalking are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of spousal abuse are leaving houses of worship. And remember, survivors of stalking are leaving houses of worship. And one more time, survivors of spousal abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of satanic ritual abuses are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of structural abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of substance use disorders are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of taunting are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of surveillance abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of teasing are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of teacher abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of telephone abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of telephone abuse leaving houses of worship. Survivors of nuisance calls are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of teacher abuse leaving houses of worship. Just remember that. And just remember, survivors of teasing are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of terrorism are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of transgender abuse or trans bashing are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of verbal abuse or verbal attacks are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of umpire abuse are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of whispering campaigns leaving houses of worship. Survivors of workplace abuse or workplace bullying are leaving houses of worship. Survivors of toxic workplaces, abusive workplaces, and narcissism in the workplace are leaving houses of worship. Lastly, survivors of overt abuse, covert or controlling abuse, unpredictability, disproportionate, exaggerated reactions, dehumanization, objectification, abuse of information, impossible situations, setting up to fail, controlled by proxy, ambient abuse, and gaslighting are leaving houses of worship. And survivors of Orwellian culture are leaving houses of worship. Orwellian is an adjective describing a situation, idea, or societal condition that George Orwell identified as being destructive to the welfare of a free and open society. It denotes an idea, it denotes an attitude and a brutal policy of draconian control by propaganda, surveillance, disinformation, denial of truth, doublethink, and manipulation of the past, including the unperson, a person whose past atrocities idealized from the public record and memory practiced by modern repressive governments. Often, this includes the circumstances depicted in his novels, particularly 1984, but political doublespeak is criticized throughout his work, such as in Politics and English Language. The New York Times has said the term is the most widely used adjective derived from the name of a modern writer. So, survivors of Orwellian culture leaving house of worship because there is Orwellian culture in mosques, temples, synagogues, and churches. And you want to know why all these types of people are leaving houses of worship? Because society gives them the compassion that these houses of worship refuse to give them. Whether it's from the pulpit, whether it's from the ministries, whether it's from a lack of referrals, and it's from a lack of building coalitions with secular expertise who specialize in the traumas that they are recuperating from. People are getting, survivors were getting their needs met outside of the houses of worship because houses of worship refused to meet our needs. We're fed and hydrated outside of the four walls of the house of worship, but we experience starvation, dehydration inside of these houses of worship. In conclusion, a lot of churches, mosques, temples, and synagogues engage in mob speak as well as misinformation, which is another reason why survivors are leaving these houses of worship.